This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Graphic images from Iraq are almost impossible to escape. Charred bodies hanging from a bridge in Fallujah, a soldier holding a naked Iraqi prisoner on a leash, the beheading of Nicholas Berg. While some Americans think it's their responsibility as citizens and as voters to look, everyone agrees that these images are difficult to deal with. But what about kids? As increasingly gruesome images emerge from Iraq, parents, teachers, and the media struggle with how much to show and what to explain to children. While it's nearly impossible, and some would say ill-advised, to shield them from what's happening abroad, can they really understand what these images mean? What effect might they have? Later in the program, Alan Greenspan re-ups for another term as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and your letters. But first, kids and images of war. If you're a parent, a teacher, or a teen, join the conversation. Do you find yourself trying to hide these images, or is this part of the truth of war that everyone needs to see? How does age factor in? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joanne Cantor has studied the effects of mass media on children for more than 30 years, a professor emerita at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's the author of the recently released Teddy's TV Troubles, a children's book to help families cope with disturbing media images. And she joins us from the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon.
It seems, as we mentioned, almost impossible to turn on the TV or read a newspaper or even look at the Internet without seeing new pictures from Iraq. Is it possible to think that children can in fact, be shielded from these pictures?
Well, they can't be entirely shielded. But I think what you can do is try to make sure that these images aren't the first thing they see when they hear about these events. Very young children should be shielded as much as possible because these images can be extremely traumatic for them, and it's very difficult to explain them away. Mm-hmm. And there's actually no advantage to traumatizing a child like this.
And when you speak of very young, how old are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about up to the ages of 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. Up to the ages of 7 or 8, children are mostly responsive to how something looks. So if it looks really gruesome and grotesque or alarming, that's the picture they're going to get, and it doesn't really matter that much what you say about it. Better if they avoid seeing these images and perhaps learn about what's going on in the world by words, but by a parent's words and other means. So, of course, it's going to be impossible for children to not know anything about it, but particularly the more visually disturbing images, a parent would be... It would be wise for a parent not to be watching the news with their young child in the room. Get the news at another time, because children will hear some kind of alarming noise and then look at the image, and it could take a very long time for the child to get over it in terms of nightmares or clinging and anxieties, and it's not worth it.
There is one set of images that we have to deal with, of course, what you're talking about, the charred bodies, the beheading, if you, of course.
Yes.
But the other set of images, I mean, the abuse of Iraqi prisoners, bad enough on its own, but there's also a strong sexual element to some of this. How does that factor in?
Well, it's interesting. I think the youngest children won't really understand what's going on. And I think my advice to parents is don't feel that you have to give the complete geopolitical history of any image that they see. If they want to know, why is that man have a dog collar around his neck? You can say something like, they were trying to embarrass him. You don't have to introduce a 6-year-old to the notion of sexual humiliation. So the important thing is really to bring your explanation down to the level that a child can understand. And I also recommend for a child, I think even up to the age of 12, they're turning to you for reassurance that they're safe and everything in their own life is going to be okay. So try and be honest, but give it a spin that's reassuring. And every one of these images obviously has a very negative aspect, but also can have a reassuring component. I mean, even, let's say, the prisoner abuse, the good news is we found out about it and we're going to stop it. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing a parent can do to help. So I mean, it has no value for a child to stay up with nightmares night after night because of the war in Iraq, particularly a young child. It is true that children need to know a little bit about what's going on in the world, but trauma and nightmares from something that they happen to stumble into on television, there's no benefit to that.
You talked about nightmares. What might some of the other effects be?
Well, nightmares and general anxieties, just worrying about a lot of things that might be cleared up easily, just insecurity in maybe they don't want to go outside, maybe they're suddenly afraid that, you know, they're afraid that somebody's going to take a plane. It depends on what the image is, but just nightmares and just worrying about a lot of things that it would be healthier if they didn't have on their shoulders right now. Those are the kinds of things that happen. And then, you know, vivid emotional memories. I wrote a parenting book in 1998 called Mommy, I'm Scared. And I had been doing research on what's frightening. And I hadn't really thought about the news as coming up, but in my surveys, the news comes up in the top 10. And I have an anecdote from someone who saw this horrible image from the Vietnam War when she was a child. And she explained that whole sequence where the prisoner in handcuffs is suddenly shot in the head with the blood spurting out. And she can describe every bit of that, but it's clear from the anecdote that she doesn't even know what war it was from. But she said, this visual image will never leave me. And you know, she's very sorry that she saw it as a child. So these kinds of things happen again and again. And particularly war is one of the big things that brings all these images constantly to the television, with parents always tuning in and not really realizing whether or not their kids are watching.
We're speaking with Joanne Cantor, Professor Emerita at the University of Madison, University of Wisconsin-Madison. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or our email address is totn@npr.org. Let's talk with Tammy, who's with us from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yes, hi. Thank you. My son is 17. And he came to me last night and told me that he had been online and downloaded the full video of the beheading.
By the Nicholas Berg.
Yeah. And I was shocked, but I was also concerned. I mean, our kids have access to this, whether it's on the TV or not. And he looked for it because they discussed it with some of his friends. And they had talked about whether it was real or whether it was fake. And he wanted to see if it was real. That was his real question. And then I asked him how it made him feel. And he said it made him very sorry for the family. And we talked at length about what it really meant and what it meant in the big picture of the world.
Tammy, your son is 17, just a year away from being able to vote and able to enlist in the Army, should he wish to.
Well, he's already a junior ROTC cadet, he and his sister both, through their high school. And so they know a little bit about Army and what being in the military. And he's very upset that the higher-ups in the military would even allow this to happen. He has pretty strong feelings about it. He doesn't feel like he wouldn't serve if he were asked, but he feels very strongly about accountability.
Yeah. Joanne, obviously there are different issues when you get to being 17.
Yes, there are very different issues, and I'm relieved to hear that he didn't have a really traumatic experience watching it. I have not watched it myself, but I've heard actually on CNN they were talking about some of the grown men in the newsroom who downloaded it and watched it, and they were to a man sorry that they had seen it because the image was so vividly seared in their memory for such a long time and such a disturbing, traumatic image. So if somebody asked me, what would you do if your child wanted to do it, I would, I think if you forbid something, then it becomes the forbidden fruit and they'll want to watch it, to see it all the more. But I really feel, if someone wants to see it before they're because they're curious, I would sit down with them and say, talk to them about how these traumatic memories do stay in your brain pretty much forever, and think about how, whether or not they want that and want that emotional upset to stay with them. But it is true that, I mean, there are different images with older children and adults. It's a matter of understanding what's going on and having that as part of, you know, the image as part of your knowledge. I think that I personally feel that I have the knowledge of what happened and don't want to add on to it that emotional baggage that will stay for such a long time.
Yeah, I can't even begin. I know what pictures and images, how they are just burned into your brain, and I just hearing what happened. He described the video. We talked about it, and we talked about how horrific, just how totally horrific it was. And he said, it didn't make me sick. It didn't, it didn't make me want to throw up. He said, but it was just so horrible that people could do that to another human being.
Tammy, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's speak now with Larry, and Larry's on the line from Frankfort, Kentucky.
Yes. So glad I could be on the show. My comment is that even though I agree with the speaker that these images certainly need to be handled appropriately and that parents need to be very careful about the age of their child and how it's presented, and especially for young children, not showing them these horrific images, which, as we know, will sear in their brain. I think in some ways it's more important for young people to see these types of images in the proper context than it is to see a lot of the images in violent media and violent video games that are for entertainment purposes, where they don't get to see the outcomes, and they don't understand that when somebody is treated badly, that there are outcomes and that terrible things happen to people, that, I think there's a desensitization and dehumanization that has occurred in our culture because of much of the popular media not showing these outcomes that do occur.
I think that's a very good point. And in fact, I've been curious about how children who are playing some of the more violent video games that allow you to actually behead your virtual opponent and see blood spurting out, how they would react to this. Would they be desensitized, or would it suddenly make them view their violent video game in a different way? Because obviously we do, our young people are, many of them are living in a world of fantasy violence where the kinds of horrible things that are going on in Iraq are actually played with. So that's a very good point.
Do children process that sort of cartoon, though very realistic violence, differently than they would the Nicholas Berg video?
Well, there is a difference. And, of course, it depends on the age, too. For young children who don't understand the difference between fantasy and reality, they may not make that much of a difference. But as you get older, there is an extent to which you process it differently. You can keep in your mind, let's say the video game is not real, and so that might dampen your emotional reaction. But in terms of desensitization, the desensitization process can happen even if you understand that something is not real. If a lot of people say, well,
I'm afraid we're going to have to cut away to the break. I apologize. Larry, thank you very much for the call. We'll be back with more from Joanne Cantor. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the effect of war imagery on children. Do you think kids should be shielded from graphic pictures, or is it important for them to see the reality of war? You're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Joanne Cantor, who's a professor emerita at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the author of Teddy's TV Troubles, a children's book that helps families cope with graphic media images. And I wonder, we were talking about different age groups. Do boys and girls process these images differently?
To some extent they do. But usually research shows that boys or males are less scared or less disturbed than girls or women. However, a lot of that difference comes from a self-report bias that men are much less likely to admit that they're feeling bad. So there seems to be something of a difference, but it's not as large as it seems when you just ask people how they're feeling.
Joining us now to discuss how the children of service members might be responding to these pictures is Frank Gomez, principal of Santa Margarita Elementary School on the base at Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. He joins us by phone from his office. It's nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you very much, Neil.
Many of your students have family in the military. How are they responding from these pictures from Iraq?
Well, one of the things that we're making sure at the school site is to keep things as normal as possible, Neil, so that kids are focused in on the learning and the reading, the writing, and the mathematics. In terms of how they're responding, a lot of it depends upon the reaction within the home setting, and we're leaving that responsibility oftentimes to the parents.
Have kids been asking questions?
Not really, Neil. As I said, one of the things that we've done is to make sure that we keep focused on the academics and the sense of belonging within a school setting. And we are an elementary school, so for many of our kids, their ages are from 5 to 12 years of age. And so much of what we do is allowing the kid to be a kid in terms of worrying about playing and worrying about homework and worrying about the academic rigor within a classroom.
It struck me as something of a surprise that the children, again, these are children, many of whom have parents in Iraq, haven't commented about these images. Are you surprised?
Well, yes and no. And the yes part of it is because it tells me as the principal at the school site that parents within the home setting have stepped up to the plate in terms of having to deal with it with their children in the home setting. And the no part of it is I'm not surprised at all because of the fact that they are military and they do have a way of life in which they have the support at home and hopefully the support at the school site. Should those a need for a student to discuss it come up, we're ready and prepared to be able to do that with individual students.
I wonder, do you think that you would handle this issue differently at your school than, an elementary school anywhere else than a military base?
And I would have to say yes, based upon my own experience, Neil. I was on what I called a civilian elementary school previously to coming to Santa Margarita, and 100% of our kids are military dependents. And one of the things that you do see out on a civilian is that when one of these events occur or something tragic may happen with a military personnel, it tends to be an event that calls attention to it, just like the media has reacted to some of the things that have come up recently. Whereas in Santa Margarita, as being on base, we try to downplay it. We don't bring these images out in front of them. And there are purposes and reasons as to why we don't do that.
Well, if I might comment on that, it seems like they have a good approach there because they've dealt with this before and they're familiar with what the consequences would be. I think that their policy might be good for other schools. I think some schools bring it in so that it may even show live news in schools, which makes sure that everybody is aware of it and everybody has to deal with it, rather than letting life go on in a more regular fashion, and then responding as needed to individual kids. And my, you know, my my approach, particularly with the book I wrote for children, is to just remind kids that they're safe and let them do calm activities and not necessarily get into the details of what they have just seen.
Frank, thanks very much for being with us today.
And thank you, Neil, for having me on again.
Okay. Frank Gomez, principal of Santa Margarita Elementary School on Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. He was with us by phone from his office there. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Steve, who's with us from Auburn, Ohio.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I grew up watching the Vietnam War on TV, and I was about 12 years old when the May 4th events happened at Kent State University here in Ohio.
Sure.
And seeing all that and, you know, seeing the papers and everything, and I don't believe that, at the time at least, I don't believe that I was affected negatively about with the images. It was what I could understand, I understood, and what I couldn't understand just went over my head. And I just wondered what's going on today that, you know, that kids are more in tune with stuff. I remember the May 4th thing, you know, at 12 particularly affected me, the images, but especially considering that it was my government that did the damage.
Yeah. Joanne?
Well, I think, first of all, we have a much more visual news now than we did. If you look back at, well, there were a few images from the Vietnam War that really stood out, but everybody didn't have a camera in every location. Now we see even the difference between the Gulf War and the Iraq War is astounding. Now that war was very there were very few cameras there, and so the images were very, very remote, and we hardly saw anything the way we see it now. And so I really do think that with the new technology and also 24-hour news, we are seeing much more today than we ever did before.
And because of the internet and other things, much more graphic images than we ever did before.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Here's an email that we got. My brother is from Emily in Minneapolis. My brother's a soldier who's stationed in Guantanamo Bay right now guarding prisoners. I've been praying that my daughters do not hear about the abuse of prisoners in Iraq and think their uncle is doing something like that to the prisoners in Cuba. I truly don't know what to tell them or what to do.
That's really a tough one. Of course, we don't know how old the daughter is, and that it would depend how old the daughter is would make a difference in terms of how explicit you would want to be. First of all, I think avoiding the news with your daughter right now probably would be a good thing. If the daughter is confronted with it, then I think you can reassure. If the concern is about the uncle, reassure that your uncle would never do anything like that. You know him, etc. So there's always there should always be a way to have a some sort of reassuring comment. Now, the kind of difficult thing that is much more difficult would be is so and so in harm's way, and is the next explosion going to happen to somebody I know? Those are the kinds of issues where it's really hard to know what to say. And in fact, you know, if the person is young enough, kind of changing the subject slightly. You can't give anybody a guarantee that anybody's always going to be safe. But we can say, let's talk about either something else, or let's talk about the really good body armor there is, or let's talk about where he is compared to where the action is. Just finding some way to avoid having the child obsess about a negative consequences that probably won't happen. But as I say, when you give an explanation to a child, you have to give them the calm, unequivocal, limited truth. That means you can't lie outright, but say as little as you need to do to find some sort of way to cast whatever it is in a more reassuring light. Because when kids ask questions, what they really want is reassurance. that they want to be able to say, oh, okay, I don't have to worry about that right now. And if you can find a way to do that truthfully, you're doing them a great service.
Judy Menke is a social studies teacher at Wallenberg High School in San Francisco. She's shown images from the Iraq War to her AP U.S. History class there, and she joins us now by phone from her office at the school. And nice of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Conan.
Why did you decide to show these pictures from Iraq to your class?
Well, I didn't even have to decide to show them. I picked some up off of students' desk. We get the newspaper here at school. And I did decide, though, that I needed to have a formal lesson around this and to really give a serious look at what was going on. As I said, our students are encouraged to read the paper, and it's in our classrooms every day.
And these are, I assume, an AP history class, juniors or seniors?
Juniors.
Yeah. So which pictures did you decide to show in the classroom?
Well, I had just received my New Yorker, and it had the image of the hooded men and then the two soldiers standing behind, which wasn't particularly graphic or violent, but I found it very disturbing because of the face of this young woman. And it was like, whoa, what is going on here? What are we doing? And so I thought that that was an appropriate one. I did not read the description of other things that had gone on that were in the article. I did decide not to do that.
Had you shown other pictures, Fallujah, for example?
No, but as I said, they were all over the school, and it was on the front page of our paper. Our paper, the Chronicle, is one that did run that.
I understand you've also been trying to put these in some historical context, talk about images from previous wars, pictures from Vietnam, for example.
Yes. So what I did is I had the students answer questions about what they'd seen, you know, so far, and what their response was, and then why this was being made such a big deal of, that there's abuses, you know, in times of war and peace. So why was this such a big deal? And I wanted them to really think about what America's place is in the world and, you know, why this is so troubling. And then, yes, I used the photograph from Iwo Jima, and I said, well, this is the good war. These are the images of war that we like, of us struggling and doing something good. And then I had some from Vietnam. It's always kind of sad to me that our students don't know that much about Vietnam. And I did just choose to use mainstream ones that are very well known, for instance, the child running down the road.
Yeah,
but, of course,
Vietnam,
it is very disturbing.
Yeah.
What kind of reactions did they have? Were they upset or were they curious or generally?
They were upset. They were surprised that America, you know, had done such things and that we were doing such things. Most of our students are immigrants or children of immigrants and have a very positive view of what an American is, that we are always the good guys. We are always the ones rescuing. So it was pretty disturbing for them to see this other side.
At least three teachers at another California school have been placed on paid leave for allowing students to watch the videotape of Nicholas Berg's beheading. What about that? Would that be something you would think is appropriate for your classroom?
No, I would not. And as I said, I didn't even read the descriptions. But I've been through extensive training in teaching the Holocaust with the Holocaust Museum in D.C. and our Holocaust Center here. So I feel that I'm a pretty responsible educator in how to deal with disturbing images and history. There's lots of dark sides to humanity that do need to be looked at.
Thank you very much for talking with us today. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Judy Menke is a social studies teacher at Wallenberg High School in San Francisco. She joined us by phone from her office at that school. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joanne Cantor is still with us, Professor Emerita at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And joining us now is Morgan Wandell, a president of programming at Channel One News, a television news organization that produces a 12-minute daily newscast for middle schools and high schools nationwide. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm gathering that the ages of the students who see your daily broadcast is what, 8 or 9 to 17, 18?
Not quite that young. Our youngest viewers are about 12 or 13, and then they go up to 18.
Okay. So have you decided to show any of these pictures from Iraq?
Yes, we have, but only in a very limited way. We've shown two photos. One, we showed the man standing on the box with the hood over his head. That's, you know, one of the most iconic pictures that's been out so far. And two, we showed a picture of the young woman who's been brought up on court-martial charges that had put the leash on some of the inmates, but we did not show a picture of the inmates. She had been brought up on charges. We thought it was appropriate to, show a picture of her. You see a bit of the leash to suggest what was going on, but we did not show the inmates on the ground.
Did you consider the possibility of not using any pictures at all?
We did, but we thought it was really going to be impossible to tell the story and convey this kind of shock and disbelief that people around the world have had over these pictures without giving some suggestion of what kind of things were happening at the prison.
Let's get another caller involved. Robert joins us on the phone from Phoenix, Arizona.
I have a couple of statements that could lead into a question, but one of them is I don't understand how it is that the people that seem to be experts have their heads hidden in the sand. I mean, these kids, at any point in time, if they want to see any of these pictures, can go on the internet and find them. It doesn't take a school teacher. It doesn't take a parent. Children nowadays, I think, are a little bit smarter than we were when we were children. They're a little bit more savvy at getting information when they want it. There's no problem getting porn. There's no problem getting pictures of it, the video. The teachers that showed it in school might have been doing them a favor in being able to talk to these kids as opposed to going over to Johnny's house and watching the video at Johnny's house.
If any kid wants
to see it, they can see it.
Joanne Cantor?
It's one thing that kids who want to see it can see it. It's another thing if you have it in school, you're forcing everybody to see it who doesn't want to see it. And that is a big difference. So, of course, there is this issue about the internet and kids who really want to see these being there. But your question is one that, since some of them can see it, you seem to think everybody should see it. And that really is a question that that I think is quite arguable from the standpoint of mental health, and particularly depending on the age of the child.
And Morgan Wandell, was that part of your decision, that there was such a wide age group that would see these images?
Yes, it was. We try and be very sensitive to the youngest viewers in our audience, while at the same time not kind of programming our show in a way that has seemed to be too juvenile for the older members of our audience. So we're always trying to find that appropriate balance. Like the caller, we know, too, that many of our students may be seeing these things at home, reading the newspaper, watching it on the news with their parents. But we know, given where our show is seen, we need to just be extra careful.
Can you stay with us for a couple of minutes? We need to take a short break, but we have a couple of more questions for you.
Sure.
Okay, Morgan Wandell is going to stay with us, and also Joanne Cantor, and we're going to take more of your questions on the issue of images of war and kids when we come back from a short break. The number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, or email us, totn@npr.org. We're also going to be taking a look at the news today that President Bush has re-nominated Alan Greenspan to be chairman of the Federal Reserve Board for another 4 years. So that when we return from the break. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're discussing violent images of war and how much of these images children can handle, what ages are appropriate. Our guest is Joanne Cantor, who studied the effects of mass media on children for more than 30 years and is professor emerita at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Also with us, Morgan Wandell, president of programming at Channel One News, a television news organization that produces a 12-minute daily newscast for middle schools and high schools nationwide. And Morgan Wandell, you were talking before the break about how your organization decided to run one picture of an abused Iraqi prisoner and a picture of one of the Americans who's accused in the case. I wonder, what was the reaction from teachers and students over this decision?
We got very positive response to our coverage. We have been doing this for quite some time and know kind of what the line is that we have to be careful about. The only time that we heard any criticism of our coverage was actually one day when we elected not to cover the story, and some people were writing in saying, hey, this is still a big story, why aren't you guys covering it? Mm-hmm. With our audience, just like I'm sure your audience and the rest of the general public, there is some fatigue around this story, the larger story of Iraq. So we look for opportunities to cover other things when they present themselves. When this is a major story and we have to cover it, we do cover it.
I wonder, I've not seen Channel 1, but a lot of news organizations, once they've broadcast a picture once, then it's fair game. You can broadcast it again as many times as you might think appropriate. It's even incorporated in bumpers, you know, going back and forth from commercials or montages that are sort of Iraq, the war coverage. And you don't do that.
No, we don't. Right. And we try and play it very straight. Because, again, given the, you know, ages of our audience and where our show is seen, we don't need to do that. And besides, we're not in a ratings race with, you know, Fox or CNN. We don't have to be more over the top than the next guy to make sure that our numbers stay high.
Joanne, you were trying to get in there?
Yes, I think that's a very good point, because what happens, particularly with young children, the repetition over and over again, very young children think these things are happening over and over again. And so it really multiplies the effect. And I also really think that predictability is so important. If you're going to show a graphic image, then if it can be later in the day, or if there can be a warning, or with the television, with a newspaper, there was you reported at the lead of this show about a newspaper who put it on the front page. Well, I would say print it, but put it on the inside. I know it seems to sell papers, but why don't they just say graphic images inside on the cover so that kids don't see it? They'll probably sell more papers that way. And, you know, kids won't be traumatized by it as the paper is laying on the doorstep.
Morgan Wandell, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Morgan Wandell, president of programming at Channel One News. He joined us by phone from his office in New York. I wanted to end with this email that we got from Michael. Why do I have to get censored in what I see because of the children, he asks? If they see it good, they can learn that there are bad things out there and that maybe they'll be a little more cautious in life. Second, he points out, I remember when I was younger and my father came home, the television immediately went to Walter Cronkite and I immediately left. The news is pretty boring to children, from what I recall.
Well, I agree that he shouldn't be prevented from seeing what he wants to see. I think that, as I said, making it predictable and making it possible for kids not to see it, or possible for anybody not to see it who doesn't want to see it and who may be interested in hearing about the story, but not in the form that TV news presents, which is the most sensational and visual as possible. So there are other ways of telling the story. Let's find ways for him to see it the way he wants to see it, and other people to choose other ways to see it.
Thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joanne Cantor is Professor Emerita at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the author of Teddy's TV Troubles, a book on how to help children cope with difficult images in the media.